Today's procedure is really easy, procedurally speaking. It's easy to do, in other words, so it always goes smoothly. It should go even smoother for you today, though, because of that week we took off. Remember when we only did the quiz? That made all the other labs backed up. And therefore, the topic today is something you've already learned and were tested on, which is photosynthesis, old stuff. You should already know this stuff, so it should go really smoothly. But anyway, it's a new technique, just like the last couple of weeks have involved new techniques. This technique is respirometry. That name says that it's the measurement of respiration. It's literally what the word means. But it's really the measurement of respiratory gases, specifically oxygen and carbon dioxide. Those also, though, happen to be the gases involved in photosynthesis, right? So the technique doesn't have to be used to measure what's going on in cellular respiration specifically. It also applies to photosynthesis. There's all kinds of different respirometric techniques. Two major categories of respirometry, though, which are closed system respirometry and so-called flow-through respirometry. Now, in both of those cases, you have the subject, whatever organism you're studying, in a chamber, a respirometry chamber. For closed system respirometry, you seal that chamber off once you put the subject in it. And then you just measure either the oxygen or the carbon dioxide or both, or maybe even water vapor, depending on how sophisticated a setup you have, which is going to change in a closed, in a sealed jar, right? As the organism undergoes either cellular respiration or photosynthesis or both, the amount of oxygen or CO2 or whatever you're measuring will change over time. In flow-through respirometry, you're making the same sorts of measurements, but the organism isn't sealed in. You put the organism in the chamber, and the chamber has air flowing into it that you know the composition of. And then air, of course, flows out of it as well, and that's what you measure. So by knowing what the difference is for the stuff that flows out compared to what flows in, you can get measurements. Typically, if you use an animal as your subject, especially a mammal, you would use flow-through respirometry, because if you seal a mammal, which has a high metabolic rate, into a chamber, it'll suffocate eventually, right? Well, you're not using an animal today. You're using spinach leaves, and that's not eaten spinach back there. I heard you were hungry. That's only for the...
I love spinach.
It's reused spinach, though. They've already been in chambers, so don't eat it.
I think that's
flavor. Anyway, you can lock a spinach leaf into a closed chamber and it's not going to die. So you're using closed system respirometry. And you can go ahead and open up your boxes that are there to see that your chambers are really just those plastic jars. And the sensor itself, which is a carbon dioxide sensor, so you're not measuring oxygen, you're measuring carbon dioxide, is fitted with a stopper. So you put your subject in the jar, you put the stopper with the sensor in it into the orifice of the jar, and that locks it in. You can open that, but don't breathe into it. Go ahead and open up your jars just to let them equilibrate with the air around you, but don't intentionally breathe into them. You're going to dump a bunch of CO2 into it from your breath. Okay, so that's the difference between flow-through and closed system. If you have a setup like yours where you're only measuring CO2, but you have it being measured continuously, meaning the instrument's hooked up to a computer that's taking samples every second or whatever interval. The computer will form a graph, continuously updated graph, right, of CO2 versus time. Now, even though I told you that we usually don't put animals in a closed system, you could, certain animals, like insects, for instance, because they can last a long time in a closed system. But you put an animal into a closed, sealed chamber, measuring CO2 continuously, what is the trace going to look like in that graph? Yes, CO2 is going to rise. So it'll be an upward slope over time, right? Why is that? The animal's producing CO2. Where does the CO2 come from? Well, yes, the exhaled breath contains the CO2, but where does it come from chemically? From the food, exactly. From the fuel that's being burned in the overall process of complete combustion of glucose, right? In other words, glycolysis first and then cellular respiration. So the CO2 that you get in the first and second parts of cellular respiration, that's just what's left over from what started out as the fuel or the glucose. Okay, now what happens if you put a plant into the same kind of chamber and make the same kind of graph? What's the graph going to look like? You mean like this? Yes, it could be. It could be. A plant could have a downward slope. A plant could have an upward slope. A plant could have just a horizontal line. It depends. What does it depend on?
Light.
Light will make a difference, yes, but explain why that is true. In a way, what is light directly used for in photosynthesis? What part of photosynthesis? The light-dependent reactions, right? And what is the goal of the light-dependent reactions? To produce ATP is one goal. Don't do that. What else? Just ATP? NADPH also. In other words, the light-dependent reactions transduce light energy into the energy of ATP and NADPH. That's because the Kelvin cycle, or the light-independent reactions, can't use light as their energy source. They need energy, but it has to be in the form of ATP and NADPH. What else does the Kelvin cycle have as input, though? It inputs ATP and NADPH. What else? CO2. Which is why CO2 should go down if a lot of photosynthesis is occurring, right? Because the CO2 comes from the air that's in the chamber. So that explains why you could have a plant with a decreasing slope. Like you said, how could it have a trace that looks just like an animal? Anyone? If it's building up, it must be being produced, yeah. How is it being produced in a plant?
Cells.
Yes. I've said several times already that you should never lose track of the fact that a plant doesn't have just chloroplasts. It has chloroplasts and mitochondria. So a plant can be undergoing photosynthesis and cellular respiration, both. Right? An animal, on the other hand, is undergoing cellular respiration, but never photosynthesis. So if the animal is alive, the CO2 is only going to go up. In a plant, it could go down, up, or remain the same, though. How could it go up? What would the conditions be for it to go up? Well, maybe, or more probably, cellular respiration is taking place, regardless, in a plant, if it's alive, just like it is in a living animal. So CO2 is being produced by the mitochondria. CO2 might be also being used by the chloroplast for photosynthesis. But if the rate of photosynthesis, how much that's happening, is less than the rate at which the mitochondria are producing CO2 by cellular respiration, then the plant's going to be releasing more CO2 than it's taking in. And therefore, it will build up over time, right? It will give an animal-looking trace. If cellular respiration is occurring at a greater rate than photosynthesis. On the other hand, if photosynthesis is occurring at a greater rate than cellular respiration, then the plant cells are going to be taking in more oxygen than they are spilling out. Because they're going to use that CO2 for the Calvin cycle, which is photosynthesis, right? And therefore, they're taking it out of the air overall, and it will go down over time. Does that make sense? When would it be totally horizontal? If the rates of the two processes are equal to each other. Yeah, if you have just as much photosynthesis occurring as cellular respiration. Now, you're not going to be adjusting the cellular respiration rate, right? Because that doesn't depend on what happens photosynthetically. It's just happening continuously like it is in our own cells. So how can you force the graph to be downward, upward, or horizontal? By changing the amount or the intensity of light. Right. If you get the light strong right on the leaves, a hell of a lot more photons are going to be absorbed by the chlorophyll, and therefore much more energy is going to be delivered to the Calvin cycle so that it can take much more CO2 out of the air to turn it into sugar. More CO2 than the mitochondria are meanwhile spilling out. And therefore it's taking more out of the air. If you give it less light, or if you block the light entirely, you're not shutting down cellular respiration, but you're shutting down photosynthesis. And therefore, the CO2 should build up. And if you play with the light enough, you could get a nice horizontal line as well, if they evenly match each other. Or just match each other, I guess it's redundant. If they evenly match. All right? So that's all there is to it, really. Like I said, you've already learned this stuff, so you should know why these things are happening. You're not collecting any data, but you're hooking up a computer to see your graphs form. And just like last time, make sure when you put them back, they're totally shut down and recharging. But it's all really just demonstration. You're not collecting any data, so don't worry about saving it when you're done. Just look at the graphs as they get produced. Follow the instructions and explain it to yourselves. But also make sure that you can explain both sides of these laminated sheets, which you should already be able to explain since you've been tested over it already. Just make sure you give them a look and discuss those as well. That's all for today.